This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. State regulators in a draft ruling have reduced the permanent rate increase proposed by Connecticut Light and Power, slashing the number from $221 million to about $130 million. It's big news in an ongoing controversy over the energy company's plan to increase electric rates. Last month, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority did approve a temporary six-month rate increase, meaning some CL&P customers could see their bills go up by as much as $18 a month between January and June. Now, last month on the program, we talked about some of these confusing facts and figures with the Deputy Commissioner for Energy at the DEEP and also with Luther Turmel, who covers energy for the New Haven Register. But we wanted to bring in folks from CL&P to talk about this a bit with us. And so we have some people in studio with us to take your questions at 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, WNPR.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us in studio is Mitch Gross, who's a spokesman for CL&P and Yankee Gas. Mitch, good to see you once again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, John. Good morning.
Also joining us is Enoch Lenge, who is a CL&P energy efficiency spokesperson. Enoch, welcome to the program. Good to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, Mitch, maybe we can just talk about the news that's off the top here. When PURA, which is the public regulatory authority which oversees electric rates in the state, puts out a draft ruling like we saw yesterday, maybe you can explain exactly what we're talking about here.
Okay. There's a lot of information here, John. I'll try to be as succinct as possible.
Sure.
There are two sides to your utility bill, the delivery side and the supply side. CL&P is a delivery company, all right? We are not an electric supplier. We do not generate. Think of it this way. We're kind of like FedEx or UPS. We deliver a product or a service. If you order something, say for the holidays, online from a company and it's costing you, $10 more this year compared to last year. Who do you complain to? You don't complain to FedEx or UPS who delivers the product. You complain to the manufacturer of that product. I want your listeners to keep that in mind. Now, you have delivery and supply. Here in Connecticut, you are encouraged to shop for the supply side. For whatever reason, nearly two-thirds of CL&P's 1.2 million customers don't shop for an electric supplier. Keeping that in mind, we must buy the power for them. So what you saw last, 2 weeks ago, mid-November, was the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority approving the contracts that we have entered into with these suppliers for the electricity that we must deliver to our customers.
And when you talk about suppliers, give us a sense of who you're talking about here. Who makes the power that you're supplying to us?
They have names that are not household names. There's like an Exelon LLC. There's Dominion and they go by those names. They are not household names. However, these are companies that we work with regularly. We have a team of buyers who look at the market day in and day out and look for the best possible price on behalf of our customers.
Okay.
So what you had in mid-November was PURA saying yes to the contracts, and hence the $18.47 for that residential customer who uses 700 kilowatt hours a month. This is done twice a year by state rule. PURA requires us to enter into these contracts. We do so year-round. Twice a year, we file the paperwork with PURA. They review it. Hopefully, they approve it. And then these portions of your bill, the supply side, that goes into effect January 1 and July 1. What took place yesterday concerns the delivery side of the bill, the money for CL&P. Oh, may I also add, on the supply side, those are pass-through costs. What the suppliers charge us, we turn around and charge our customers. There's no markup. There is no profit on supply side. So that $18.47, we turn around and give that right back to the suppliers after our customer pays the bill. Now, back to the delivery side. Yesterday, PURA approved, it was a draft approval of our request to adjust our rates to increase the money we need to continue to upgrade the system, to do the day-in and day-out work we need to do.
And this is on the permanent increase side. We're not talking about this temporary increase, which I suppose we'll get to later, which is the one that PURA has already approved, and that has to do with a price spike that's happening over the winter time.
Right.
And that's sort of an entirely different thing, and that's essentially settled at this point. We're going to see an increase in our electric bills around this temporary price spike, but that's not what we're talking about here. This is on the other request that you've made.
That's right.
Okay.
There were two, and I know the media keeps saying another increase. There have been two requests, one for the supply side, one for the delivery side.
I will say, to be fair, one more than one is two, which is another. So I think that the media is probably right in that, but please continue.
It is unfortunate timing, but that's how the thing everything fell this year.
Yes.
We had our request and our request for the delivery side. The draft decision came out yesterday, as you noted. Mm-hmm. It was not everything we asked for.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're reviewing that decision right now. We're determining whether to file comments as we're allowed to do per law. And then PURA makes its final decision known around December 17th.
So, and this is where I want to bring Enoch into the conversation. Of course, if you have questions for representatives from CLMP, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. One of the concerns that people had who looked at this rate increase was that, in essence, CLMP seemed to be saying that we need to recover costs because of the success of energy efficiency programs, that in essence, you guys aren't making as much money because we're all doing such a good job not using as much electricity, which is the thing I think, you know, Al Gore told us to start doing 10 years ago, and we're all trying to do. First of all, could I have you comment on that construction of an argument about how exactly this works? Is CLMP looking to recover costs because we as a state and we as a society are using less electricity, therefore you're not making as much money?
Well, let me first, let me ask Mitch, so the answer is no, first of all, but let me ask Mitch, on the delivery side,
mm-hmm.
what was the proposal for those costs to, cost increase to cover? Is that for the lines and wires?
That's for lines, wires, transformers, substations, tree trimming, all of the day in and day out work we do to make the system stronger, safer, more reliable. That's what the delivery side request was to PURA, and they'll come back with a final decision in just a couple of weeks.
Okay, so
the energy efficiency programs have they've been in place since 1998. When we deregulated, and the utilities have been administering them since then. And so they are regulated by the state, and the utilities, CLNP, are approved to administer them. So the natural ebb and flow of the program is, yes, it reduces electricity, but ultimately it makes our infrastructure more stable, meaning if we have a better idea of how much electricity that we're going to use by not having spikes, in different times of the year, by implementing energy efficiency, then we have a better control over our system and don't have to build more infrastructure. So that's one side of it. And then the other side of it is that, we do save a significant amount of energy, but that also helps in times like this when there is a need for people to help reduce their energy costs so that they can, help reduce their bills.
But so how does that then jive with a request for, in these cold winter months when we've got a need to heat homes, or in the, I suppose, hot summer months when we have a need to cool homes, we are trying to, again, as a society, use less electricity, taking pressure off the grid, making it easier to deliver, hopefully, electricity. It seems to many consumers that they should benefit in their pocketbook from that. That indeed, if you're using less electricity, you shouldn't be hit up for a rate increase on top of that. I'll get a quick comment from you. I'm sure Mitch wants to jump in, but
The reason I asked Mitch before is because the rate increase on the delivery side does not have to do with energy efficiency. It has to do with improving and stabilizing our system, our lines and wires. But on the supply side is where there was an issue that wasn't foreseen, which is the spike in natural gas, usage, both in generating electricity in power plants as well as the usage in just in our region. So it's a regional issue that happened to occur this winter.
But how could we not foresee this spike, Mitch, in natural gas usage, given the fact that our governor has led an absolute charge toward getting more people turned onto natural gas? Mm-hmm. Others in the Northeast have done the exact same thing. You would have to not read the newspaper very much to see that natural gas prices in America have dropped over the course of the last several years because of the enormous boom of natural gas discovery, including right here in the Northeast. It seems as though we should probably know that this reliance on natural gas is something that we're girding for right now, right?
In New England, over half of all electricity generated is generated by natural gas. However, at the same time, we're at the end of the pipeline, both literally and figuratively, John. End of the circuits, end of the pipeline. One of the reasons that suppliers are charging us more for electricity is their inability to get all of the natural gas they need. There's not enough, as they say, capacity in the current pipelines. CLNP's parent company, Northeast Utilities, has introduced a proposal along with a company called Spectra Energy out of Texas to use the existing pipelines that are out there, the existing rights of way, and expand those pipelines to get that needed natural gas to the suppliers to hopefully knock down the price to generate power.
If you have a question, 860-275-7266, and we're going to get to those questions in just a moment. Just to get back to this pocketbook issue, mm-hmm. I think this is what happened, Mitch, in our last conversation when we had folks from the DEP, and we were trying to talk through this issue, and we'd actually invited CLNP on the program, and I'm glad you folks are able to come today to help us discuss this a little bit. To consumers, when we talk about supply side or delivery side, mm-hmm. when we talk about lines and wires or whatever else, here's some of the things I hear from consumers. One is, it's kind of a monopoly. I mean, there really is only a few people who do the supply delivery stuff at all. You look at a company like CLNP that's part of a bigger company, Northeast Utilities, that seems to do pretty well in the stock market. It seems as though you guys make money. And whether I'm talking supply or delivery or whatever else, all they see is a rate increase. They see that they have to pay more for something, even though they're, you know, using their newfangled electric bulbs and their LED lights in their house, and they're trying to conserve wherever possible. And that's where the question lies. No matter where you say it's coming from, the consumer still says, look, I'm paying $18 or $20 or whatever it is that I don't have this wintertime to actually pay for my electricity.
John, we certainly sympathize with our customers and those who are, you know, and the increase, especially those with difficult financial circumstances. One of the reasons we're here today is to say there are programs, there are services, there are ways to work within the current situation here. And let me also point out, on the supply side, this is not just a CLNP issue or a Connecticut issue. This is a New England issue. If you look at what companies or utility companies are facing all across New England, on the supply side, CLNP, yes, a 26% increase on the supply side January 1st. Our friends at United Illuminating, a 54% increase on the supply side January 1st. And you go right up toward Maine. Central Maine Power, if you're a small business customer, 150% increase on the supply side. It's not just a CLNP issue. It's all across New England. All utilities are dealing with it. All are trying to work with suppliers the best they can. The suppliers are facing the capacity issue on the pipelines. They're trying to get out the electricity that's needed. It's that domino effect, so to speak. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the entire situation.
Let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Prospect. Hi there, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on where we live.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I think I have an answer for the CLNP gentleman's requirement for capacity. Currently, when individuals put solar panels on their house, they get a state and a federal grant or subsidy to do so. However, and if they produce energy for their house, they can basically reduce their energy bill to near zero on the supply side. However, they're still charged a delivery charge from the electric company, which if they reduce that delivery charge to zero, they would encourage people to use solar. And in addition, if they have extra or surplus power, they can sell it back to the power company. However, currently, they do not receive market rates for that sellback for the overage, meaning above and beyond what they use. Those things that I just mentioned could be
Jeff, thank you very much. Enoch?
I'll mention that that is actually an ongoing discussion right now across the whole nation, actually. So it's a discussion that – so we have a whole department of distributed generation folks is what we – I guess you would call them. But it focuses on, you know, these types of renewable energy sources and how they're connected to the grid and how we work with our customers, microgrid technology with, bigger customers, individual residents, how we are looking to the future. To have an answer for you right now, I'm not sure that I do that's going to satisfy you, but it is something that we're looking at to structure for the future better for our customers, because we do see the future going more towards solar and making it easier for customers, because ultimately that makes makes our state better from a power perspective.
And I'll add, there is a place for renewables. The issue is, all of these renewables still use the system. They still use, as they call it, the grid, the poles and wires to move the power back and forth. That has to be maintained. Upgrades need to be done. That has to be safe and reliable no matter what. If you have a solar panel on your roof, or you buy from a supplier, or you get your electricity from CL&P, the system has to be safe, reliable, resilient. And that's what it's all about. And our ability to continue making those targeted investments in the system, that's vital to keeping this system working well.
So one of the things I just want to talk about quickly before a break, and we do want to get to some more phone callers, and thank you for being patient because we want to get to your calls, is this question about making this investment in the system. I just want to read from Brian Dowling's story. This is in the Hartford Courant, about this draft decision that we were talking about from the utility regulators.
You're talking about yesterday.
This is yesterday.
Okay.
I'm talking about yesterday's decision.
The delivery side.
The delivery side of the system. So one of the major reductions, he writes, to CLMP's rate increase was in the return on equity or profit margin it proposed. The company wanted a return of 10.2% on the investment it makes in poles, wires, and other equipment, an increase from its current 9.4%. Instead, regulators favored an analysis that resulted in lowering, not raising, the company's profit margin to 9.17%, reducing the overall increase by tens of millions of dollars. In reducing CLMP's return on equity, regulators concluded that, quote, investors expect less of a return today than in 2010 when the current rate is set. On top of that reduction, the decision lowers the profit margin further as a penalty for CLMP's deficient and inadequate performance during Tropical Storm Irene and the October nor'easter, both in 2011. I'm wondering if you can just comment quickly, Mitch, on that part of the PURA decision yesterday.
A healthy ROE is attractive to investors via Wall Street. If we have a lot of if we have interested investors on Wall Street willing to buy stock in our company, that makes us a healthier company. That increases our ability to borrow money at a better rate to take that cash and then plow it back into our system to continue with those upgrades that we need to do. Now, you have to refresh my memory on the second part of Brian's.
The second piece of this is that on top of that reduction, the decision lowers the profit margin further as a penalty for CLMP's,
okay,
quote, deficient and inadequate performance during Tropical Storm Irene and the October nor'easter, both in 2011. Essentially, what I read from that as a layperson is that the state is taking a look at how CLMP performed around those really, really difficult times and whether or not our system has been maintained, whether or not CLMP has put the money back into the system to upgrade it over the course of time, and that we should then again, you know, say, well, we want to give you more money to put back into the system. Maybe you didn't do it last time. We want to hit you with a little penalty.
The answers are yes and yes. We continue to work on the system. We continue to make upgrades. I'll tell you that PURA reviewed, yes, there were problems in 2011 and 2012. We have learned so much after those storms. After Superstorm Sandy, PURA reviewed our performance, called it, and I'll use their words, clearly improved. We are much quicker, much better, much stronger. We continue to put tens of millions of dollars into the system annually. We continue to learn from every storm. Our resiliency numbers last year were the best they've been in over a decade. So we continue to move in the right direction.
Let's go to Tom, who's in Canterbury. Tom, go ahead.
I moved here from Kansas about 12 years ago, and I was paying $90 a month for electricity. I moved here and my electric bill went up to 180 or more bucks a month. And I recently called the guy who bought my house in Kansas and asked him how many kilowatt hours he was using and what he was paying. And he basically said it turns out he was using twice as many kilowatt hours as me, and I was still paying more than he was for electricity, and it just doesn't make any sense to me here. I just feel like somebody's making an awful lot of money, and it ain't me, and somebody's getting hosed, and I think that is me.
Tom, thank you very much for your phone call. So Tom came from Kansas. He says, well, things are a lot cheaper out there. Why is it so much more expensive in Connecticut than it is in Kansas?
The price of power set by suppliers is higher in this part of the country. As I said, we are at the end of the pipeline. We are at the end of the circuit. It's more expensive as far as power goes here in New England. I did some math before we went on the air, and I looked at the supply side. If you're that 700 kilowatt hour customer, the $18.47 a month. If you're on the delivery side, the $7.12 a month based on the draft decision yesterday. You look at that, it's $25.59 a month, unfortunately. But nearly three-quarters of that is on the supply side. It's what we're being charged by the suppliers. It is something we have no control over. We negotiate with these companies to get the best price possible for our customers. It's what the current market is. It's currently what the market is asking, and we have no choice but to pay. We have to get that electricity for our customers.
What would allow us to negotiate better with the suppliers?
That would be a good question for our supply team to sit down with the suppliers. They base it on numbers of customers, anticipated usage, time of year, availability of natural gas or other sources to generate the power. There's a formula that goes into all of that.
Availability of other sources, like, I don't know, renewables, Enoch. I mean, availability of things that maybe they have more of in Kansas than we have here in Connecticut, right? Things like wind, solar.
Well, I think, I mean, your question about, what would allow us to negotiate better with suppliers is, I mean, unfortunately, this is a regional issue. So whether, how well you negotiate, I'm not sure that it would make anybody too much happier, because the reality is there's a strain on the system from the spike in natural gas demand. So that side of it is the bulk of the increase. And so,
And the question that I'll get from my listeners, if we didn't rely so much on natural gas, and if we relied more on renewables, wouldn't that allow us to drive down the cost?
Well, if we were purchasing our energy from renewables, right now, if you looked at the cost analysis, it's actually more expensive to do that. So,
but we haven't made a massive investment in renewables, certainly right in this state and in the region.
And that's what we're looking at right now.
Massive increase in expenditure in natural gas, but yet we're being told that that's costing us more money because there's all this demand, but yet we don't have the gas coming in.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's what, I mean, we're looking at, is it the, what's the
It's
the
called
name
Access
of the...
Northeast is that pipeline expansion project. You know, we have to move quickly. We need to be allowed to move quickly to upgrade that system, to bring in that extra natural gas. And let me,
very quickly, yep. Okay. Let me take a break. Hey, go ahead.
Okay. Your caller in Canterbury, I was going to say, when we deal with the suppliers, there is a state energy procurement manager who overlooks the contracts, and of course, PURA also reviews them all. So we're doing the best we can under the circumstances.
We're talking with Mitch Gross and Enoch Lenz, who are both from CL&P. We're talking about electric rate increases. We're taking your calls at 860-275-7266. We'll get back to more of them right after this break, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about electric rates here with representatives of CLMP, that's Connecticut Light and Power. Mitch Gross and Enoch Lenz are here. We're taking your calls at 860-275-7266 for the next 15 minutes or so. Chris is in Avon. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of things coming from our friends at CLMP around at the top of the hour about, why aren't people two-thirds of the base going to private contractors for their supply, and then later on talking about shareholders and stock prices. And my real challenge to them is, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people don't do that. I think what we're looking to hear from folks like you is, you're supposed to be our partners in the area when it comes to energy. It's not a thing we can do without. It's a necessity for life in the area. And we're looking for ideas from you as far as how can we fix this? And it's not just, well, we need to get in more gas. It's what's your plan for the future so this is a temporary thing? And are we going to see those plans and see this materialize sometime in our lifetime where we are going to be getting a better value and it's not just, well, we, you know, it's more expensive this year than it was last year, so we're just going to keep charging you more. And in 20 years, I'm going to be paying $500 for an electric bill.
Well, first of all, Chris, thank you very much for your phone call, and you raised a lot of things. Mitch, I'll let you tackle some of that because I want to get to this idea of shopping for suppliers, but go ahead.
We're looking into everything. You know, how can we provide more value to our customers? Enoch mentioned renewables. You know, how do we work better with the suppliers? You know, Enoch's our man when it comes to all of these energy efficiency programs. There are a lot of programs and services out there right now that customers can take advantage of, businesses and residences, to make the buildings more energy efficient, tighter, so to speak. It's all about, you know, driving down the utility bill and doing what they can under the current circumstances while, you know, the planning continues and the, you know, changes would require changes in the law. They would require changes in regulation. We had deregulation many years ago. Do we re-regulate? And I know there are some people at work that are rolling their eyes when I say this, but, you know, these are all things under discussion. You know, I don't have an answer, a definitive answer.
The thing that our caller raises, Enoch, that we were supposed to get to is an energy marketplace, an ability for us under deregulation to be able to shop for energy. And one of the things we found is that you always get flyers in the mail from some company that says you could save this many cents per kilowatt hour over CLMP, just sign up with us. But we've done programs right here with people who say, look, I've been bait and switch. Some of these companies don't do a very good job. They actually raise my rates. There's variable rates that end up screwing consumers even more than, you know, a fixed rate increase would. So, I mean, if there's no real marketplace, you know, Chris and Avon's wondering, where do I go?
Right. Yeah. What I'd like to talk about is just, you know, two different options. And one is what you just mentioned, which is, you know, looking for an alternative supplier and why that has kind of, you know, put a bad taste in people's mouth. But, you know, how to look at that better. And then also I just want to mention about what people can do from an energy efficiency side and what our programs have to offer cost effectively that can really help people this time of year. So first on the alternative supply side, working with a different supplier, what we really encourage people to do is, you know, read the language. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of different terms out there. There are a lot of different, you know, variable, fixed rate, you know, a lot of different, you know, 3 months of one thing, you know, and then variable after that. So unfortunately, the structure of many of those companies is, you know, it's difficult to understand without reading the complexity of it and understanding it. So we really encourage people, this is a good time of year to do it because the reality is it's going up in January. So if you want to reduce your rate on the supply side, do it now and make sure that you're locking in for a price that is going to continue for a certain period of time. And if it changes after that period of time, know that and know what it's going to go to, or at least have an idea of that so that you know, you don't get hit with that. And then also understand a couple other things like, you know, if there is a fee to get out of the contract, or if it is a contract, those are some other important things to know.
Okay, let's get it. John is in Hartford. Hi, John.
Hi, this is John Humphreys. I'm with the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs, and I had a couple of comments. One, it's frustrating that CLMP is changing its story. Back in the summer, Charles R. Goodwin, Director of Rates and Forecasting at Northeast Utilities, testified about this rate increase, that the challenges from energy efficiency and distributed generation have caused a downward trend in billed revenue per customer. And in response, the company has pushed to have more of its bills based on cost of service rather than volume of energy sold. So that saying that it was the fixed charge increase was related to downward trend due to energy efficiency. And so this morning they're giving a different story. The other thing I just wanted to say is that CLMP already has one of the highest fixed charges in the region, And with this increase, it would be the highest in the region. And that has nothing to do with the cost of energy. The governor, the legislature, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and the public have all said we want to expand our energy efficiency and renewables use. We want to grow the green economy, creating good jobs here in Connecticut. Increasing the fixed charge is counterproductive to all of those policy goals. If you want to go west, then stop walking toward the east. We're moving in the wrong direction.
John, thank you very much. Ms. Gross, could you just respond to John?
This is all about a stronger, more reliable system. Mr. Goodwin's comments, everybody's comments from our company since day one, it's all about a stronger, more reliable system, putting the money into the system so it works. When you flip that switch, you get the power when it's needed. As far as Mr. Humphreys mentioned about green jobs, et cetera, our vendors, and Enoch will attest to this, regarding the energy efficiency programs, they are more popular than ever. The phones are busier than ever. People are taking advantage of the programs. The vendors are busier than they've ever been. There's plenty going on, and in that regard, we're moving in the right direction.
Did you have a thought? I wasn't sure if you wanted to jump in. I've got Jim on Colchester on the line here. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. We are talking about a rate increase for CL&P, but at the same time, they're talking about having a guaranteed profit margin of 9%. Now, why are we seeing a rate increase to maintain their profit margin? No other, you don't see that in other industries, and frankly, I find it appalling.
Mitch, Jim, thank you very much for your phone call. I think a lot of people have questions along these lines, whether or not it has to do with, you know, they see the story about the parent company doing very well on Wall Street, whether or not they see, you know, asking for a fixed profit margin. The way people perceive this is we're essentially guaranteeing a profit margin for a company that has a very tight grip on how I get my energy. They're asking for a rate increase. Why don't they just take it out of their profit margin?
I think John, I answered this earlier when I stated, you know, in order for investors to be interested in us, we our parent company, Northeast Utilities, needs to be a healthy company. The profit margin is only part of the story. It's taking that customers need to understand the tens of millions of dollars we put back into the system every year to give them a stronger, more reliable system. The equipment's expensive. It costs money. Tree trimming, it's unbelievably expensive, and it has to be done. You know, trees are the number one cause of outages in this state, especially during storms. All of these costs add up. It's the cost of doing business. As any other company, you know, deals with increasing costs, we're facing the same challenges.
Let's go to Richard in Southbury. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm getting ready to consider changing suppliers. And the spokesman for CL&P was saying that they do their best to negotiate with suppliers for the best rate for us consumers. And yet on the state-sponsored website where we can pick alternative suppliers, the vast majority of them all provide rates lower than what CL&P is. So what I'm wondering is why can't CL&P negotiate better rates for us customers, given that there are many, many other suppliers with much lower rates available to us? I don't quite understand that.
Richard, thank you.
It's a matter of timing and contracts and when the contracts were agreed upon. At this current moment, yes, many of the third-party suppliers are offering a more attractive per kilowatt-hour rate than we are. That can change. That has changed. We were previously lower than the suppliers. So depending on the time of year, when you enter into the contracts, et cetera, all of these variables, the numbers change. The gentleman's doing the right thing. He's going to energizect.com. He's clicking on that button that says choose your electric supplier, and he's doing his homework. We encourage our customers to do that, not only for the suppliers, but for the energy efficiency programs that Enoch is helping to talk about.
And I'd like to just mention something really important is, you know, how do we use less? I mean, ultimately, this is a tough time. I mean, I'm a young individual. I have a home, and you know, it's you know, paying a higher bill is tough. But how do we use less to ultimately reduce that amount that we're going to pay? So. I run some of the energy efficiency programs, and I'm very passionate and excited about them. So one of the simple ways that a homeowner or a renter in Connecticut can take advantage of energy efficiency in their home is by having a program that we run called Home Energy Solutions. And it's a simple way to do a lot and to make a big change on your utility bill. So it's $99 copay to a customer. And what we do is we send qualified technicians out to the home. They spend anywhere from 2 to 5 hours in the home finding air leaks, sealing them up on site, changing light bulbs, putting in insulation, finding ways to save hot water, and then proposing bigger energy efficiency measures with 0% financing afterwards.
And I signed up for that. I actually went through the program. Do you guys fund that, or does the state fund that?
No, it's the programs.
Yeah, so yeah, but I just want to make sure I understand, just so that our listeners completely understand what you're talking about. This is a state program, right?
No. So yeah, I mean it's regulated by the state. Great question. But everybody that pays a CLNP bill contributes into the energy efficiency program. So it's a customer funded, and basically it's a pool of dollars that is meant to encourage energy efficiency.
But I don't think it's a particularly fine point. I just want to make sure that people understand. This is not a project, a program that CLNP itself is funding. This is something that is in our electric bills that is regulated by the state that comes through our electric bill, which, by the way, we can really only get from CLNP in most of the state, and then it goes to put this fund together. I just wouldn't want people to think that this is a CLNP project that you guys are paying for and giving people this great deal.
Yeah, the way you explained it is exactly correct, and it's under the name of Energize Connecticut, which is the state regulated and branded name for energy efficiency program. So the average customer would see about $250 per year savings on their bill from having this service. And it's about $1,000 worth of costs in services.
I just have one more question here before we have to take a break. Susan's in Hamden. Hi there, Susan. You got the last word.
Hi. I hope I don't have the last word. Listen, I have. We just went to solar. I was really upset. I used 250 kilowatts last month, and I had a $60 bill. So going to solar cost me a lot more per kilowatt than because of the standard generation fee that the utility companies get. There are two comments I want to make. One is they get a 10% profit, and yet they have a quasi-public-private status. In the state, that's what they are, a public company, somewhat. And so that means it's, public. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And the second thing is these fixed costs are, there's a lot of hidden costs. My husband did an extremely thorough analysis. And when you see Pura's, the documentation that they give to Pura, there are so many hidden costs per kilowatt hour or per whatever. It's like 0.100142 per kilowatt. It's a very, very complicated thing. And I don't think most of the people at the state are really aware of what these utility companies are asking for.
Well, Susan, you raise a lot of good points there. And I'll just put that as the last word to Mitch Gross. One of the things she's talking about is just, look, we just said it. We said it on the air. We said it off the air. This is probably, I think we can all agree, needlessly complex. It would be really hard for a layperson to read his or her electric bill and say, I get it. That's how much this is going to cost. She's talking about hidden fees that go into electric bill. What do you say to Susan in Hamden?
Well, she's right. There are a lot of taxes, fees, costs for programs that the state requires us to put into the utility bill in separate line items. She is, by the way, if she lives in Hampton, she's a United Illuminating customer. So I can't comment exactly on what she is seeing on a UI bill. But for a CLNP customer, yes, there are taxes, there are fees, there are all kinds of programs and services that we all pay into as residents of Connecticut. So in the case of, for instance, Energize Connecticut, as Enoch has noted, it makes perfect sense. Take advantage of these programs that everyone's paying into.
Mitch Gross is a spokesperson for CLNP. Thank you so much, Mitch, for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
I also want to thank Enoch Lenge, who's CLNP's energy efficiency spokesperson. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to follow up on another show that we did recently and talk with a distributor from Herbalife. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, the state Supreme Court will take up an issue that's pitting privacy advocates against First Amendment proponents. Meanwhile, Simsbury's first selectwoman resigns after taking a big pay cut. It's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. We'll talk about these stories and more with our panel of reporters and experts. As always, you can join our conversation on the next Where We Live and also at WNPR.org. We're talking about some consumer issues today. We're going to turn to one that has a big impact in the Latino community, the ongoing popularity of Herbalife, the multi-level marketing company. It's made billions selling nutrition supplements, weight loss products, and personal care items. They've been praised as an innovative business model. They've been pilloried by some as a pyramid scheme. We held a conversation earlier this year, but frankly ran out of a lot of time to talk with Marco Gonzalez. Marco is a senior distributor of corporate communications for Herbalife North America. Marco, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, John. Good morning.
We talked last time in the program about some of the things that consumer advocates here in the state are looking at. They say that 88% of distributors make $0 in payments from Herbalife, that 99% of the distributors drop out after the first year. I'm wondering if you can respond to some of these criticisms, especially those that are leveled at the company, about the way they market within the Latino community.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. We really appreciate it. First of all, those numbers are coming from lobbyists and, you know, the attack from Mr. Bill Ackman. He placed a very irresponsible $1 billion bet against the company that we would fail. And, you know, they've been creating fictional numbers. Those numbers you just quoted are completely false and they're incorrect. You know, 75% through independent research studies that we did of our Herbalife members come to the business because they're interested in our product. So they never had an intention to make money or sell the product or resell it and make a profit. Therefore, to say that 99% of people that come into Herbalife lose money is completely false. Okay, so, you know, think of Costco, a Costco membership. People buy an Herbalife membership because they like our product and they want the discount on the product. So, you know, when we look at the allegations, especially in the state of Connecticut, there were 25, you know, apparent complaints. We take those very seriously, John, to begin with. You know, one is too many, and we like to get to the bottom of it. However, you know, there were really not substantiated. And, you know, when you put things in perspective, we have over 4,000 very satisfied Herbalife members in the state of Connecticut. And out of those, at least 1,300 of them are Latino. And as a Latino, I take offense to this type of allegation that this company is taking advantage of Latinos.
When you say the numbers are just dead wrong, what are the numbers? I mean, how many people do end up making money who get into this as distributors?
You know, there are people that come into this business that fall in love with the product because that's how it starts. They don't, you know, they come to Herbalife because they love the product, they lose weight, they maintain their weight, they feel better about themselves. You know, the number of people that do this on a part-time or full-time basis is much smaller than that. You know, it's like 25%. And these people, some people just need some extra cash. You know, we're part of a direct selling industry that has been around this country for many, many years. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, not only here in the U.S., but around the world. And, you know, this company is offering an opportunity for economic self-sufficiency. You know, we're not promising anyone to become a millionaire or to become rich. You earn what you want at the time that you want, and that's the beauty of direct selling.
I want to get to just a couple Herbalife distributors, people who are here who are joining us by phone. Let's get first to Jose Vargas, who's calling in. Jose, thank you for your phone call. I'm wondering, could you just give us your Herbalife experience compared to what Marco's saying?
Sure. Good morning, and thank you for having me. Well, to be clear on one thing, you know, let me not say that the products do not work, because they do, and I have helped a lot of people. Now, when the product was introduced to me, it was through these wellness clubs that you guys are promoting as an industry or as a company. And that is correct. The point of going to this wellness club was to try the product to see if it worked without the intent to become a distributor. However, the owners of the club kind of put a little bit of pressure on you. Oh, you should. Now, coming from myself as an entrepreneur, you know what? I did look at this as a business opportunity. However, a lot of empty promises were made to me, to my brother, who was also a distributor, to my brother-in-law, who was also a distributor. And with those promises came, oh, we're going to be here. We're going to help you. You're going to succeed. You should quit your job. You know, this Club 100 program that you guys have in tech, I feel that is geared towards undocumented Latinos who cannot get a job. Doing these multi clubs is what they call them.
Jose, I'm just gonna jump in on you real quick because we're running low on time, and I'd like Marco to respond to some of that. And Marco, Jose is talking about really extreme pressure being put on people. People saying you can make a living, you should make a living at this, and he's saying that this is pressure that's somewhat unwelcome.
You know what? And I'm sorry that Jose had that experience, because that is definitely and certainly not something or a behavior that the company condones. It's the exception, not the rule. You know, the company offers a low startup cost. Obviously, it's $65 or so for your startup kit. And you know what? The company has a very, very open and clear consumer protection for the consumer. We want to ensure that if you're not happy, if within 90 days, Jose says, you know what, Marco, this isn't for me, the company will return you your money fully guaranteed. No questions asked. You keep the product. That's fine. Your startup. We also have, one of the most generous policies in the industry for buying back product. No questions asked. As long as that product is sealed, we'll take the product back. If you're not happy with it, if you can't sell it, if you're not interested in it, we will buy it back. I'm sorry that he had that bad experience, but this is not. It's not the norm. This is the exception.
Mary Sanders is here. She joined us during the last program. She's executive director of the Spanish-speaking Center of New Britain. I know that you laid out some of the stories on the last program. I guess I'm just wondering if quickly, Mary, you could just respond to what Marco Gonzalez is saying about the way in which the product is actually marketed within the Latino community.
Well, the product is marketed within the Latino community and other vulnerable communities. I actually have Jose's whole story here with me and dozens of others. And this is pretty much the norm. People go in and they start as a consumer, and there's a lot of high pressure on them to become distributors. Number one, the products are costly. So even if people like the product, if they're effective for them, it's easy to fall in. When somebody's saying to you, come in as a distributor, you're going to get a discount on your product. But as soon as they do that, then there's pressure to become a supervisor. So Jose ended up spending about $10,000 over the course of a year and a half. And the biggest check he ever got from the company was $12.
Well, one thing that I think a lot of people would ask, Mary, is people have read about some of these stories in the past, and there's sort of an American feeling of caveat emptor, right? Let the buyer beware. At the end of the day, Jose may have lost money. Should he be looking into this company a little bit more closely in terms of what he's getting into?
Well, the fact of the matter is when people go to the clubs and they get invited to go to the trainings and the extravaganzas and all that, the first thing they're told is sit down, make a list of your friends and family members that you can target. Maybe they don't use the word target, that you can invite to come into the business with you. And Jose, you heard Jose's story. It was Jose, his brother, his brother-in-law. I have two sisters and a mom here in Hartford that I'm working with. I have two sisters and a brother in New Britain that I'm working with. So you have whole families. I have comments here. I have all these documents with me. And a lot of them say, we cause problems in the family. I have one statement here. I didn't talk to my sister for a year because of this. So it is dividing up families when the market gets saturated. People, this has to bottom out. I have a problem with all multi-level marketing. So this is really a problem that needs to be looked at.
Mary Sanders is executive director of the Spanish-speaking Center of New Britain. Marco Gonzalez is the senior director of corporate communications for Herbalife North America. And this is Where We Live.